Imagine, if you will, a wonder treatment that could help you overcome anxiety, combat depression, reduce ADHD and stress. What a blessing that would be, says Dr. Bonnie J. Kaplan, research psychologist and co-author of The Better Brain. Kaplan goes on to say, there is a paradigm-shifting approach to treating mental disorders with food and nutrients. For Kaplan, that approach is a broad-spectrum one, an approach that was contrary to the magic bullet approach to medicine. She says when she learned about nutrition, it was one nutrient, one disorder. And she says, unfortunately, that's not the way the brain works. Your brain needs all 30 micronutrients, a mix of vitamins and minerals. At the turn of the century, her research was met with skepticism and outright rejection. In fact, she was shut down. She said Health Canada shut down her research, and she went on to say that when the Director General of Health Canada tells you to stop your clinical trials and return all your patients to their psychiatrist and get them back on medication, you do it. Naturally, no one would fund her research because she was told vitamins and minerals are of trivial importance to your mental health. Then in 2009, she led a team of 12 scientists to determine the relationships between maternal nutrients before, during, and after gestation on maternal mood, birth outcome, and infant neurodevelopment. In 2013, Dr. Kaplan became a founding member of the International Society of Nutritional Psychiatry Research, an organization that emphasizes the importance of nutrition above the neck. In 2019, Dr. Kaplan was awarded $250,000 by the Dr. Rogers Prize for Excellence in Complementary and Alternative Medicine, money that she has added to the more than $750,000 she had raised and committed to fund ongoing research through two donor-advised charitable funds, one in Canada and one in the United States. I invited Dr. Bonnie Kaplan, the co-author of The Better Brain, to join me for a conversation that matters about the broad spectrum approach to a healthy and better brain. Bonnie, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure.
Our mental well-being, it is in many ways such a fragile thing. There's a part of me that wonders why more people don't have challenges, because this instrument or organ between our ears is so complex. But what was it that led you to start to say the micro nutrients, the vitamins, the minerals that we consume play a fundamental role in our well-being? What got you to that point where you started to say, there's a connection here and we have to examine it?
Well, it came from a lot of directions, as you can imagine. But my training in psychology, as people say, I'm not a real psychologist. I've never done therapy. My training really was in physiological psychology. And then, so I learned a lot about the brain and neuroscience. And then I did a postdoctoral fellowship in neurophysiology and neuropsychology. So I learned a bit about how the brain works. In all of that time, though, I did not take a course in biochemistry, which I very much regret, because I had to do a lot of self-teaching. And as I learned about biochemistry, I saw the role of micronutrients in brain function. And it's such a basic principle of how our metabolism works that it should be, in my opinion, it should be part of all of education from elementary school right up through medical school. It's such a simple, you can teach it in 5 minutes. Once you know what nutrients do in brain metabolism, you will never again take them for granted.
However, when you started your research, you weren't convinced of that link either.
No.
So what happened?
Okay, that's a very good way to put it, actually. So I was taught that vitamins and minerals were of trivial importance for brain function, which is a silly thing to think, because it's, in fact, the only thing that makes our brains work is having air and oxygen and so forth. So really, it was seeing some lives transformed. And we tell the story in the introduction about how I first met two families in southern Alberta. who had tried to control serious, serious mental health symptoms in one of the families. And it just happened that when I met them, I was doing behavior genetics research. And so I plotted out three generations of this family. And it was what we call 50% penetrance in three generations, 50% of each large group of siblings had severe mental illness. There were suicides in every generation. And that's really interesting because it fits with what Linus Pauling said in the 1960s, that what might be inherited that would explain mental disorders is the need for additional micronutrients in the brain. And that led me down a path to saying, I've got to learn more. They were controlling these symptoms, these two families. They were controlling the symptoms with micronutrients, minerals and vitamins. And I could see for myself that lives were being transformed. I just thought that maybe it was rare. I thought maybe, oh, for an occasional person it might be relevant, but it might be rare. But do you know how common mental disorders are right now?
Well, far more than one is comfortable knowing.
Yes.
I only know it because I read it in, you know, reviews of your book.
Yeah.
Tell me the numbers.
Well, when I was a child, say 1960, it was less than 1%, maybe less than 2%, depending on where you draw the line. And now it is 20% of people at any given time have a diagnosed mental disorder. And here's the really mind-blowing number. According to the World Health Organization, it is 50% lifetime prevalence. One out of every two people at some point in our lives will have a mental disorder. Now, I don't know about you, but the way I was brought up, that in itself is insane. It's crazy that we are accepting a 50% lifetime prevalence. We have to look at our environment. Something has changed.
So what do you think that something is?
Well, it's never really simple. It's never one thing. We don't exercise as much as we used to. We are isolated. I mean, our family's a perfect example. My husband and I moved 3,000 miles away from our parents, you know. This kind of separation and breakdown in the social fabric, all of that is not good. But in addition, if you look at how we eat now, it's really different. I mean, my parents and grandparents ate whole foods in season, and they were not living on farms. It's just the way we lived. After World
War II. That's what was available to them.
That's what was available. Exactly. After World War II, we did have more and more frozen foods. And then we got those wretched TV dinners, remember? Everybody thought they were kind of neat. And from there, it just took off to the point now where over 50% of what Canadians put in their mouths is ultra-processed product. I can't call it food. Ultra-processed. That means it's got the macronutrients, fats, usually the bad fats, mm-hmm. you know, sugars, carbs, usually a lot of sugars, proteins, a lot of saturated fats, but not vitamins and minerals. I mean, it's just, they're not there.
They've been taken out of the process because you can't preserve them and guarantee 4 months of shelf life product.
That's right.
Because I know that this is one of the big concerns with processed foods. It has to last for a number of months before it's gone beyond its best before date.
Right.
How can you have those essential minerals and vitamins contained within that kind of environment?
Yeah, you don't. So we have a whole generation of people now who consider food to be entertainment, and that's a real concern. I mean, like, ooh, let's go out for pizza. Somebody walks by at work with a box of Timbits, and everybody goes, ooh. They don't do that if you walk by with fresh fruit, you know? So we have a lot of educating to do, a lot of retraining of expectations.
Okay, so let's talk about why are those vitamins and minerals so fundamentally important to our brain and our mental and emotional well-being.
Okay, I would love to give you a picture, but I think I can do it in words. it's a very simple concept, and it's enzymatic reactions. If you have a chemical in your brain or body or anywhere that needs to be converted to the next step in the metabolic process, it's almost always an enzymatic reaction. So people know that. They know about enzymes. But what people are not taught, certainly not early enough in their education, what they're not taught is that enzymes don't work adequately unless they have an abundant supply of cofactors. We used to call them coenzymes. Now they're called cofactors. And that's your minerals and vitamins. Mm-hmm. So if you are eating a really low nutrient diet, you might have chemical A and you might need to synthesize chemical B. And just think, what if chemical B is serotonin, a major neurotransmitter, or dopamine? You really want to be able to manufacture that in your brain because you can't eat it in your food. And you can't
manufacture it without those essential minerals and vitamins.
You can't get there without an abundant supply of minerals and vitamins.
And abundant is an appropriate word here, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Because there's reason to believe, this gets a little complicated, but very simply, in physical health, there are known variations in the need for micronutrients. So like you might need more magnesium for certain pathways to work, and I might need more than the average zinc for certain pathways to work, and somebody else might need more than the average B6. So there are these individual differences, but if you're getting a lot of all of them, then you will have sufficient micronutrients to make the enzymatic reactions work. When I show the diagram, and that's in chapter 2 of our book, by the way,
give us a plug for your book right at the moment.
Called The Better Brain, and I wrote it with my my former student, Julia Ruckledge, who's now at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch, New Zealand. And when we, you know, did our book proposal and Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, now HarperCollins, gave us the book contract, it was the assumption that it would be for the general public, which we wanted too. And so when we showed them a diagram of a piece of brain metabolism, there was a little bit of a, does that belong in this book? But I have to tell you that I now show that little tiny microscopic piece of the serotonin pathway is what it is. In every single lecture I give, and sometimes it's to physicians, sometimes it's grade 6, and they get it, and they tell me, I may forget everything else you said, Bonnie, which is okay, but I'm going to remember that because I finally understand why I should eat a certain way.
You talk quite a bit about sort of the mitochondrial component in the relationship between vitamins and minerals. And for a lot of people, they go, yeah, I've heard about mitochondrial, but they don't quite... So, in understanding why is it important that we understand that relationship?
So I've always been fascinated by mitochondria too. In fact, one of the favorite papers that I wrote was on mitochondria, which is a funny thing for a psychologist to do. But mitochondria are what give us ATP. ATP is our energy molecule. We don't live unless we have ATP being produced adequately. And mitochondria are doing that in every single cell in your brain and body, all over the place, all the time. The only way they can do that is if you give them the nutrients they need. I mean, to really oversimplify it, it's nutrients in, ATP out.
Right. If we're paying more attention to our diet from a micronutrient perspective, and I know, you know, we're talking about brain specifically for you, but is that not also going to be a benefit for us in the way in which our brains and bodies age?
So I can answer from... kind of it's from A to B, but you've inserted a mediating variable that I don't think there's data on. I don't think anyone has shown that nutrients have a direct effect on telomere length.
Okay.
But maybe no one's looked yet. But there's certainly, and we review some of this literature in our book, you know, we certainly review the role of nutrition in slowing cognitive decline. I mean, it's right now, if you're concerned about dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever, any form of cognitive decrease, the best thing you can do for yourself is to get rid of the chemicals and the junk and, of course, smoking and alcohol and all of that, and feed your brain a lot of minerals and vitamins.
So there's two components here. You're saying get rid of this, which is
the bad stuff.
The bad stuff, and replace it with these. And what are these?
Oh, these, well, mostly because I've studied the minerals and vitamins. I know most about them. I always say that there'd be a lot more attention paid to them if they were sexier.
Right.
But vitamins and minerals aren't sexy. Omega-3s caught the imagination of all kinds of people, and for good reason. They're so important. But it's very hard to catch people's attention to, you know, for minerals and vitamins. In fact, what do people say so often when they look at some of our studies? It's, oh, it's just vitamins. It's just minerals. Just, it's who we are.
Right. Know? But yes. It goes back to eat your fruits and vegetables largely.
Yes.
Because as you pointed out to me before this interview, we don't have any problem having access to protein in our in our diet here.
That's right.
But it's those micronutrients that exist in fruits and vegetables that are so vitally important. And to have a broad spectrum of them as well as anything else that we're going to consume that's going to supplement or support that.
That's right. It's fruits and vegetables as well as nuts and seeds and whole grains as opposed to refined grains. And
it's all part of a whole cycle of making sure that we have access to the food that's going to give us those essential elements for our own well-being.
We could do a lot right now by making better choices in the grocery store. And then, if someone is listening to me and saying, but I already eat that kind of diet, and I'm still having a lot of mood swings or whatever.
Anxiety, depression, whatever. Yep.
Then I'd say read chapter 11 in our book. Because we do try to evaluate for everybody what they should consider in the way of supplements. And neither one of us has ever been affiliated with any company. So we go through all the companies for which there is independent scientific data by people like us who are not affiliated with the companies. So people can decide what to do.
So you're in an interesting spot. You're talking about our diet, its relationship to our well-being and health. Know that the allopathic model or system has a bit of trouble with what you're saying because they're going, it doesn't fit our model.
Right.
Partly because it fits into, well, you're actually doing preventative work rather than reactive treatment.
Well, not with the supplements.
Right.
That is reactive treatment.
True, with the supplements. But if you're changing diet, it's preventive.
It's preventive.
And it doesn't quite fit in with the model. So, how do we gain greater acceptance of these principles that you say are essential?
It's all in education. But the education has to be based on science. I mean, you probably don't know this because the media doesn't cover it. But there's excellent research, longitudinal prospective studies from Spain, from Japan. Just to quote one of them, from Japan, they showed 50% protection against suicide in people who were eating a whole foods diet in this longitudinal study. 50%. I mean, if you went to your local mental health clinic and said, I know how you could cut suicide by 50%, wouldn't you think they'd be interested?
Well, you would.
Yes.
Are they?
Not yet, but it's because we cannot get the coverage out in the public. There's just, the media will not carry information about this kind of study.
Huh. You won the Dr. Rogers Prize, though.
That has helped.
Like, how does it help?
Because it's opened some doors for me. I do so many talks, 2 to 3 a week to all kinds of different audiences. It opens doors when people realize that maybe I know what I'm talking about because some other group gave me an award for my work.
Yet you don't fall necessarily within the strict guidelines of what you would think maybe the Dr. Rogers Prize is about, which is a complementary and alternative medicine. You say, no, this is essential to life.
That's right. It's foundational, it's essential, but it's not part of allopathic medicine yet. And it's time that it should be. And actually, if I can refer to the book again without boring
you. Please do,
you,
because, well, and also tell people where they can get it, just because we're almost out of time.
Okay.
Okay, so let's make sure we get a plug-in for your book.
Okay, so the book is called The Better Brain, Overcome Anxiety, Combat Depression, and Reduce ADHD and Stress with Nutrition. And we go over the empirical basis, the evidence base, for all of those disorders. I mean, there's very good scientific background to that.
The number one question that somebody's going to be asking right now, is there a diet that can move me towards a more comprehensive, consumption of food that's going to be the best for my brain and my body?
Right. And by the way, it's also the cheaper way to eat, which dispels the myth. There's a myth out there that you have to eat processed food if you don't have the money to buy good, healthy whole food. But we explain in the book how that is. First of all, there's empirical data to show it's wrong, and then we teach people how to do it. So yes, people are able to feel better within days when they get rid of the chemicals and start eating whole foods. But if you don't, that's why we have the information in that chapter 11, because people shouldn't feel guilty if they're doing their best and it's not solving their problem. They may have an inherited predisposition to need more of those cofactors that we talked about. Our vision for the future really sums it up and fits in with several of your last questions, okay? In terms of CAM and everything. And that is, our vision for the future is in steps. And the first step, everyone needs to improve their diet. And also, we hope the farmers keep trying to improve the soil of our diet. But somewhere down the line, then people should consider supplementary nutrients if they're still not feeling well enough. And they also need to consider, you know, cognitive behavior therapy and exercise and working on their social networks and all the other things, meditation, etc., yoga, that we know are very good for our mental health. We have the power within ourselves to go back to the way it was in 1960 in terms of mental health and the prevalence of mental disorders, I think. But we don't have the public will or knowledge yet. And that's really why we wrote this book for everyone.
Well, it's a fantastic read. And I think that you have identified an area that is, as you point out, essential and needs to continue to be researched and understood so that we can all get the benefit of that, knowing that it is an appropriate and correct path for us to take. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks.